And good afternoon. This is fine Saturday afternoon. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We're dealing with a little bit of technical difficulty here. So, also need to tell you that what you're about to hear on the 10th Voice is the opinion of our hosts and our guests. It is not the opinion of KKFI or the Midcoast Radio Project. So with that, I want to introduce Michael Grayman Parkhurst, and we'll get things started. Thank you much.
Welcome to Show People on the 10th Voice. I'm Michael Grayman Parkhurst, and we are here to celebrate LGBTQ theater artists and allies, both here in Kansas City and around the country. I am joined by our fantastic engineer today, Kate. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
How are you hanging in there? I know. It's good to see you, as always.
It's good to see you, as always.
I feel like
it
was just
too.
Here. This month raced by.
Yeah. You know, it was. It has raced by. It was the last time we were together was when Starlight was showing Sister Act.
Sister Act is right. My guest was there. Yeah. How was your week? Did you have a good week?
My week was good. Of course, we have our season tickets. So Thursday, we went and saw Prom.
At Starlight.
Yeah, at Starlight.
Oh, wait. I don't know how I missed that one. That was kind of always one that, I want to go see that one. It's already
closing. Well, no, you've got tonight and you've got tomorrow. The show closes tomorrow.
Okay. I you know what? I know about it. I've never seen it. I've never seen the movie.
Okay. What I will say, the dancing is great, and the music is good, and you know, kind of what's appropriate for us is if you are LGBTQI+.
Yeah.
I'm going to warn you right now. Early in the show, there are some innuendo to maybe some homophobic slurs.
Right.
Vast majority of the audience thought it was funny. I happened to pick up on it.
Uh huh.
The second half of the show is also really good. I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but I will tell you that the antagonist, who is the PTA president and the mother of the girlfriend of another girlfriend, who the whole show is basically about,
bringing her girlfriend to prom.
Bringing her girlfriend to the prom. They're lesbian, okay?
Right.
I will have to sit there and say, Mom does not know her girlfriend as well as she thinks she does.
Right.
And later in the second act, I will sit here and say, she goes on a homophobic rant. And I had to remember and bite my tongue because I'm in Orchestra 1, 5 rows back from the stage. I really wanted to yell an obscenity back to this woman, but I just had to, like, hey, Kate, you're at Starlight.
Right. And it's written like that so that this character, I imagine, I'm hoping, has a journey?
Yes, the character, right. She does have a journey.
Okay.
Now, does she complete the journey by the end of the show? I think not.
Uh-huh.
You know, but at least she understands where her daughter is.
Uh-huh.
And understands that maybe her daughter does not identify like the rest of us.
Right.
Or the rest of humanity. And
because it's supposed to take place, it takes place in a small town, Indiana,
small
right?
Small town, Indiana.
So it's really supposed to,
we've been doing this since Shakespeare wrote Romeo and Juliet and Taming of the Shrew. We're dealing with commentary about what's going on in our world today.
Yep.
So a couple of the characters are really narcissistic, and they play that up in the show.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
I would say if you've got nothing to do tonight or nothing to do tomorrow night, I know tickets are still available.
Okay.
Head out to Starlight.
Okay. Yeah, I hope Kansas City will come out for that one because again, I've heard lovely things. So
it's a good show.
Good. All right. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
The Prom at Starlight this weekend. I am so excited today. I am chatting in studio with my friend, visual artist, scenic, and costume designer, Atif Romi. It's so glad to have you on the show. Welcome.
Good to be here.
Yay, good. I'm especially happy because we're going to talk about your life in the arts, your history, what brought you here, but also talk about the wonderful Richard Allen Nichols, actor, writer, teacher, director. I'm sure I'm missing something. And your life partner.
Cook.
And what?
cook.
And and great cook.
Yes.
Are you a cook too?
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's good. That was a nice household to be in. Alan was, of course, your life partner of 40 years. And we lost Alan this past May, May 12th. And we're going to celebrate his life today. He was always Alan to you, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did anybody call him Richard Allen or Richard, or was he?
His equity name is Richard Allen Nichols. And so people that met him and worked with him in the industry tended to call him Richard.
Ah, okay.
And almost a sign of how close you had gotten is where it came into the Allen element.
Okay.
So Allen was more family.
Because Alan's his father's name, right?
Alan's, yes, Alan's his father's name.
Yeah, okay. Oh, you and Alan, I love this. You and Alan met while dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Where and when did you meet?
You know, I was trying to think, what was the name of that club? I think it was Sundance. It was on Broadway, and it was on the 6th of May. I know that because there's crazy thing that happened that day, but anyway.
The 6th of May.
Yeah, the 6th of May is when we met. And
hi, everyone. I'm here to talk about the Mixmaster Music Conference. And this year is a
connected, and eventually, after a couple of years, moved in together and then just stayed together for the rest of our time together.
So it was a place on Broadway that's not around anymore?
No, it isn't.
Okay. All right.
And like I say, I think it was called Sundance, but that Sundance was many, many years ago.
Okay. So. The 6th of May.
Mm-hmm.
What was your first impression of Alan? Do you remember that night?
Well, you know, that's something that's really funny because we both say, I asked you to dance. And then the other one says, no, I asked you to dance. And we never did agree on that. So obviously we must have both wanted to meet one another. Because, yeah, I'm sure I asked him to dance, but he asked me to dance.
That's always been the thing to talk about, like who asked who to dance.
Right. So,
did you know people in common at this point?
No,
you had never seen each other.
No.
So, Alan being in the theater world, you being also, were you in the Kansas City theater world at that time too, or is that still?
I actually had been doing more work in the visual arts and in dance.
Okay. I love that you didn't know anybody.
No.
That it was completely had it been one of those things where it's like, have you been here? Do you come here often? Like, I mean, is this like, had you been there before? I mean, I imagine.
Oh yeah, maybe, yeah. I was just coming from a friend's birthday party.
Okay.
Actually, that's one of the reasons that we haven't. There's another reason why we had that date. We had a really strange thing happen, which you said you want stories.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, we met the next day. There was a place that I really liked in Swope Park.
Okay.
That is actually the memorial to Swope. I don't know if any of you, whether you've ever seen it. It's way up on the hill, but it's very Greek and it's very theater. It's columns.
Sort of
an amphitheater kind of thing.
Okay.
And I'd always loved that place, so I wanted to share it with him. So I took him in my little car up there to see that. And then on our way driving back, I lost control of the car, hit a tree, and we landed up in the hospital together, and we've been together ever since.
That was on May 7th. That was the day after. So right away when you met and you were at the club together, you knew you were going to maybe have a date and get together the next day.
We were together, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
What a story.
So we were sort of, there we were, both of us sort of bandaged up.
And starting a life together.
Yeah.
You are from a small town in Kansas.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Kind of, what's the name of the town?
Hoisington.
Isn't that right in the, it's kind of right in the middle of Kansas, isn't
it?
Kind of a small town?
Very central. Mm-hmm.
And Alan was born and raised in Connecticut.
Right.
Yeah. What did your parents do in Hoisington, Kansas?
My father had a business there, a small business. Initially, it was in primarily hardware, and then as things moved, it became more into heating and air conditioning and appliances and things. You know, it changed with the times, essentially. And my mother was a homemaker predominantly.
Yeah. Where'd you go to high school?
Hoisington High School.
Hoisington High School. Is it small enough that that's the high school that you go to?
That was the only high school.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What was the junior high? What was before that?
What was what?
What was the school before that?
St. John's.
St. John's, okay.
It was a Catholic school.
Was your high school also? That was public.
No,
okay.
That was public.
What was Catholic school like for you? Do you remember?
Fortunately, very, 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 very good teachers. So it was actually really good prep for, we were, especially the English teacher, she was incredible. We were ready for college by the time we got into high school.
Well, that's incredible.
Oh, yeah, she was something else.
I wonder if the school's still pretty good.
I don't even know if it's, I don't think it probably is even functioning anymore.
Do you still have family there?
Not close family, no. My parents moved from there to Wichita when I was in college.
Ah, when you're at KU, and we'll get to that in a moment.
And I have some family there, but not really.
But not really, because they moved on. Okay, okay. Our guest today is the wonderful Atif Romi, and we're talking about Atif's life and also the life of Richard Allen Nichols, Alan Nichols. And we'll be right back after this break. And welcome back to Show People with my guest, Atif Romi, visual artist, scenic and costume designer here in Kansas City. And we're talking about him today. Some of your earliest memories of discovering your love for art while in Hoisington.
I don't know. It was always there.
Okay.
I had absolutely no training in art at all until I got to university.
Okay.
It wasn't available in this little town. But I drew since I was a child. And my family was very supportive.
Yeah.
And it was just natural.
As long as you can remember, you love to draw. So it did start. Did it start with coloring or what specifically?
I can remember drawing cars, houses, costumes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the three things that I distinctly remember, yeah.
You said that your parents were really supportive. Did they have a love for the arts, too? I mean, was there ever, like you said, it was such a small town, but was there ever a chance to go travel somewhere to museums?
Not really. Okay. No, that wasn't it. I'd say that the source of the relationship to the arts was probably more literature and history.
Uh-huh. Oh, did you like reading?
Yeah.
Growing up? Mm-hmm. How about your parents?
Yes, did they ever read very much so.
So you went to Hoisington High. Was there any kind of theater program or
yes.
any kind of...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Tell me about that.
Gosh. Gigi goes to Hollywood or something like that.
Yes,
I mean,
yeah.
That's the kind of theater it was, you know.
Yeah.
But I did play with it,
yeah.
Actually. A friend and I both, I can remember the friend, he would be playing with lights and I'd be playing with a set and that. I did one thing that, and I can't believe that they never, ever got angry with me. I didn't know what a psych was for.
Uh-huh.
I just thought it was a big canvas.
Right, yeah.
So we literally lived across the street from the school. So we had total access to the high school because we were involved in all kinds of different projects, myself and my brother and sisters. And so I went over and I painted a palm tree on their psych.
You didn't have an idea.
I had no idea.
But that was something that you wanted to do. Were you just...
Literally Gigi in...
Right.
In, I think it was Hawaii or something like that. And so I just thought, well, I'm going to, you know, do a little set here. So I painted.
And how did that go?
Nobody said a word.
Ah.
Which I think is really very supportive. But
yeah.
Also... Really sort of dumb.
Why would you know, though? You know, that's the thing. It's like you were just kind of going with your creative instinct.
Right.
Yeah. Are you the youngest?
No, I'm the middle child.
You're the middle child. So how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have, living, I have two brothers and a sister. And my oldest sister died of MS.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Was that a while ago?
Yes, quite a while ago.
Yeah. So you had, so you did have theater at school.
Yeah. Although I was really more involved in forensics than I was in theater.
What, because forensics is such a great training ground for theater. I mean, all around.
Yeah.
For so many things, for social everything. But what then led you to, what led you to KU then? Like, what was it in high school that said, this is where the direction I want to go?
Well, actually, I didn't go directly to KU. I started at Emporia State. And then I transferred after a year and a half, I believe it was. And then I transferred to KU.
What were you majoring in at Emporia State?
Forensics.
Forensics. All right.
Mm-hmm. Although most of my classes were actually in the visual arts. And also, that's when I first met a group of friends that were in theater. And that's how I've got involved with the theater program.
You said Alan was born and raised in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
His parents were Alan and Ruth Nichols. What did they do for a living?
His father was a farmer, and they had both orchards and vegetables and a dairy farm.
So Kensington, Connecticut, which I don't think is too crazy far from Hartford, or it was a farm community?
Well, they lived on the farm.
On a farm, okay.
Kensington must have been a section or a small town close by. I really don't know.
Yeah. What did Alan say about his parents and their relationships to theater or the support of theater? I mean, how was he introduced to theater?
Through his aunt, who had, he has a book out to act is to do, and that he goes into that quite a bit. But she introduced him to it, and he just fell for it right away.
Was this his mom or dad's sister?
It was his father's sister.
Father's sister.
Mm-hmm.
What, did she have something to do with the arts?
No, but she was very, very involved in, you know, being a audience member in the arts. And she introduced him to theater, to music, all kinds of things. She was a real mentor for him.
Did he? Do you know if he got to study and play in theater in high school at all?
You know, I don't really think he probably, well, he went off to Boston University so I really don't know. I really don't know. I don't remember us ever talking about doing theater in high school.
Yeah, but like your parents, they must have been pretty supportive of him going in that direction, or at least encouraging it. Or like you said, his aunt, which must have been helpful.
I think that it's probably more his aunt.
Okay.
I think the others were he was going to do what he was going to do anyway.
Right. Was the Boston University his first stop from high school?
Yes.
Okay. Did he know anybody in Boston?
Not that I know of.
Yeah. And you went to KU, so after Emporia State, you went to KU, and you received your BFA from there. What was your major at KU?
My major was in graphic design.
Graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that from Emporia that you wanted to go into graphic design?
I knew that I was going to stay in the visual arts, yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. And what did you know about graphic design going into it? What was your draw to that? Do you remember?
I just had a real good sense of breakup of space.
Mm.
Positive and negative space, and that it's just sort of intuitive.
Do you remember why did you transfer? Was it specifically for the program at KU?
It was I was intending to transfer to and spent a summer in San Francisco where I was going to be transferring to a school there, CCAC.
Oh.
But when I went there, I just didn't get a good feeling for it. So I came back and then transferred to KU because I knew that it had a stronger visual arts program.
What were some of the other classes you had there?
What
were some of the other classes you had at KU?
Drawing, painting, sculpture.
All of the above.
Mm-hmm. Design, photography, jewelry.
What was the last one?
Jewelry also, jewelry design. Full.
Jewelry design?
Oh, yeah, full. Yeah, it was.
Wow.
Journalism. That was all part of the program. Very good program.
Yeah. Was there something that you were kind of drawn to as you were going through the program? Like, I'm loving this. I'm understanding this. This is where you're thriving.
Design and art history. I did a lot of art history. That's probably really the reason it went to a BFA. Was because of all of the art history that I took.
I talk a lot about mentors on my show. Mm-hmm. People that helped encourage you, supported you, teachers. Did you have a teacher that you remember?
I don't remember their names. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of teachers that I can still visualize. Mm-hmm. One was a painting teacher. Another one was a design teacher. They were very supportive, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, it allowed me to be pretty much.
Mm. When you, where did you go after you graduated? You got your BFA from KU. What was your next move?
I had applied to be in the Peace Corps.
Okay.
So I went from, well, actually I'd stayed at KU for a bit and I was working at the Art Museum there, which okay. was a wonderful place to work. And doing exhibit design and also some restoration on prints and such. And then I went into the program at Peace Corps. And
do you remember at the time why you chose to do that, the Peace Corps?
I sure didn't want to go to Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
That was, where's and that also just to travel, to get out, to get someplace else, you know, to yeah. another society. Different influences.
The Peace Corps, it took you to, was it Somalia?
Somalia.
Somalia, mm-hmm. East Africa. How was that?
Incredible. Life-changing, literally mm. life-changing. I was stationed in the capital, which was very smart of them. My first project there actually was to design the interior of their offices, which may not sound like you're saving the world, but I thought that was great fun because I could, you know, deal with all the fabrics and such of the area.
And the culture. So when you joined the Peace Corps, they knew some of your expertise and they said design.
That was the first thing, you know.
Wow. Also, did you go there knowing that that was going to be an element of it? Or was it just join the Peace Corps? That you'd be able to incorporate that?
No, I was really trained to teach, and I did. Yeah. I was trained in TEFL, teaching English as a foreign language.
Right.
And I was fortunate enough I was trained at Columbia University in New York, and actually trained by the man who developed TEFL. And so Somalia was a test area for this whole thing. It's a very, very difficult language to learn. And So I taught English, ancient history, geography in English, and in teaching, we're also teaching English, which was fascinating.
Memories from that? What stands out from those moments, those years?
Oh, the things that stand out from those years?
Yeah.
I had the opportunity, I love fabric.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to work with a weaver of their indigenous fabric there and got to know him. And then, I don't know how it really occurred, but I landed up designing a collection of clothing there, utilizing fabrics that were from there. And it was backed by the American Embassy there. It was a fundraising kind of thing. And so that was an incredible experience to work with the weaver, because I literally had the fabrics woven for, not all of them, I designed them and had them woven for me for the collection. So that was fascinating. So I pulled from things there in Somalia and also in Kenya. I would go to Nairobi, and I was working with some people there with fabrics that were all hand-dyed and, you know, in a tie-dye type thing. This was 1960s.
Uh-huh.
So that was fascinating. Then I also had the opportunity to design a book of poetry. This is where my graphics came in. And it was by the poet laureate of the country. In Somalia, poetry is really their art form because they are nomads and you can carry it with you. So they don't have a tradition of the visual arts as such, you know, although they do some wonderful carving.
So they can carry their work easily.
By transport. Yeah. And so at that stage, Somali, the language, it was in parliament at that point, whether it was going to be in Latin script or in Arabic. And they came with the Latin script was the decision. And this was actually one of the first books that was done. It was paid for by the Peace Corps. But it was photographs that were done by a fellow volunteer. And then another volunteer did translations and worked with the poet laureate. And I did the layout and design of the book.
Do you still have that?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have? Oh, I want to see that sometime.
Sure.
If you'll share that with me, I'd love to see that.
That's go to the Library of Congress and see it also.
That's remarkable. Incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So I want to go back for a second because did you go to Columbia before you went to the Peace Corps in New York?
Okay. Yeah, that's where the training took place.
Did you know when you graduated from KU that you were going to go to train for in TEFL at Columbia specifically?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is that how long year program is that at Columbia for that?
Gosh, I can't remember. It was several months.
So that's not to go get a degree. That's just kind of specifically to go there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's specifically training to go to this particular location in the Peace Corps.
So you were in New York, and I know that Alan also went to study in New York at HB Studios, HB Acting Studios, under the tutelage of Uta Hagen and Herbert Berghoff, Berghoff, of course, who later married Uta Hagen. I'm not even sure if that was actually after Alan was already studying there that he had married Uta, but he studied under them too. Were you both in New York at the same time? Did your paths cross? Was he there before you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Bring me to Uta Hagen's influence on Alan's life in the theater. So he goes from Boston. He graduates from Boston University. Did he head right to New York?
He was there. He was at Boston University, as I recalled, a couple of years, and then went to New York.
Okay.
And then he was on scholarship with Uta Hagen for like 5 years. And at the studio.
Yeah.
So he was, working at night and actually booking flights for an airline, and then would audition and things, and then be working in various theater projects there.
Because I think Uta Hagen did carry through. What was Uta Hagen's influence? And I should say also Herbert Berghoff's as well.
I think it would be Uta's, actually.
Uta's, okay.
Yeah. It was his whole, she was the basis of his philosophy for teaching and acting and directing and everything. Major influence.
What was Alan's life in New York like? You said that he was booking, did he book flights? Is that what you were saying?
At night
he would do that?
Yeah, so that he could, he was married and have a son.
Peter, right? Mm-hmm. Right.
And and then he was working and also performing.
And his wife, Joanna, is that right?
Yeah, Joanna.
Where did they meet, Joanna?
Boston.
They met in Boston. Oh, they met at school?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Was she also an acting major?
No, she was actually, I believe that her focus was largely design. Costume design.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So that they did they move to New York together?
Yes.
Is that where they gave birth to Peter? Was it in New York? Okay. And so it was a lot of auditioning, like we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember highlights from his time in New York? Did you ever talk about that at all?
Not really.
No?
No.
Yeah.
That was way before we met, really.
Yes, it was. That's right. Going back to your travel, Somalia, East Africa. travels also took you to places like India and Pakistan and Morocco. Was that all with the Peace Corps?
No. When I had completed my 2 years of as a part of Peace Corps, I was out. And then so I spent a year then, because I was already out there, and I love traveling in different cultures. So I spent a year then from where I traveled more in East Africa and went to India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran, Turkey, and then back into Europe.
What were some of those travels like, those countries for you?
Incredible, just incredible. Because, I mean, it was all over land, you know. I mean, I was on buses and this, that, and the other, you know, going. And it never actually, it was just making a decision on one day and saying, no, well, I think I'm going to head to Kabul today. And, you know, taking a bus over the Khyber Pass. And I mean, it was astounding.
Well, I'm sorry. So when you were traveling all these places, what were you doing as far as work goes? How were you able to kind of incorporate all of this?
I was drawing and studying the cultures and hitting as much art as I could, meeting people.
Wow. Tell me about some of those. Like, what was Pakistan like for you?
Lahore. I don't have a strong image of Pakistan. The strongest image that I have actually is India. India is incredible.
Why?
The colors, the people,
food,
the culture.
Yes.
I spent quite a bit of time in Banaras or Varanasi, depending on what you want to call it, and that is the holy city on the Ganges.
Got it. Okay.
And just the culture. It's ancient, and the colors, the patterns on pattern, the light. I love the miniature paintings.
I would imagine the fabric also.
Oh,
of course, the textiles.
The hand-woven fabrics.
Yeah.
Just incredible silks in this. And yeah.
They're not afraid of color.
Oh, no, I love color.
I love the pinks and the, the blues.
Well, they say that pink is India's black.
Oh.
But that, you know, it's not really
that makes sense.
Pink.
Yeah.
Just that zonk pink.
You've said before that travel has had such an influence on your art.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to you now about that, that makes complete sense.
Right.
How much of the cultures, specifically from, say, India, Morocco, Spain, Italy, all those places that you traveled, have you brought into your work as an artist?
Oh, I think that, I think it's subconscious. And one of the things definitely is pattern on pattern.
Mm.
That is something that I was just so amazed at, that how, and some of that has to do with the light.
Mm.
If you have the strong light like you'd have in East Africa and that, and then you start throwing, you know, African patterned fabrics, you know, the batiks,
yeah,
and that, and then throw a chiffon on it, you know, because they have the headdresses and all of that, and the flow of it and the light. It's, yeah, pattern on pattern definitely would be one of the major influences.
Can you describe the light in Africa as you remember it?
Intense. Just intense.
Hmm.
And I had the good fortune of, I was there in Mogadishu, and which is right on the coast, on the Indian Ocean. And where I stayed was literally a stone's throw from the Indian Ocean on the third floor, so it was incredible.
I think, you said you went to Iran, is that what you said?
Yes.
How is Iran for you, to be in that country?
It is unfortunate what has occurred there, because it is seriously a country of poets.
Uh-huh.
And I had the good fortune, I mean, I spent most of my time in Tehran, but I had a good fortune of going to Isfahan. Which,
wait, one of them?
Isfahan.
Isfahan, okay.
And that is where there's incredible mosques and, again, fabrics and things like that. The block printing that's done with wood cutouts. I went to, you know, the different places where these were printed. And I mean, the culture there is just, I met people there that were, well, like I met the fellow that designed the cape for the Shaw Arenas.
You did?
Yeah. He had a shop there, a clothing shop. I met people that were in that whole industry, I was very into the whole fashion thing.
Uh-huh.
And while I was traveling, I would have all of my clothes custom made, uh-huh. usually with hand woven fabrics, as I traveled from country to country.
I need to see pictures one of these days.
I don't have any.
None?
No. Many of those cultures are xenophobic.
Uh-huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you and Alan travel together?
Not much. We did go to St. Thomas, and here in the country, you know, we went to St. Thomas, but not outside of the country, except for St. Thomas once, and then we went to Provincetown in New York, mm-hmm. and then we'd go up to see Peter and Susan in Connecticut.
Yeah. Was there ever a desire to return to some of these countries with Alan, or was there not an interest on his part or your part? What?
As Alan got older, his health would... Mm-hmm. really wouldn't allow him to do that kind of traveling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When did you move back to Kansas City then?
I think it was 71 when I moved here.
Okay. Mm. And sometime before then, Alan moved to St. Louis.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What brought Alan to St. Louis with his family?
He was with a program that brought theater artist to St. Louis, and I can't remember what the grant is, a specific grant, but he worked with a lot of the schools, especially in more disadvantaged neighborhoods, bringing theater to them and working with that. And then he also taught at WashU.
And that was specifically, that grant was specifically to take him to right. do that mm-hmm. in St. Louis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How was, for Joanne and even Peter, what was that move like? Were they pleased to move there too? Were they?
I really don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was the program like that he ended up working on, both there and at Washington University? Has he talked about his years at Washington?
Well, I talked more about some of the improv groups that they developed. That they worked with students.
Did the improv group start in New York, or was that specifically
no,
in St. Louis?
No, that was in St. Louis.
What were some of the improv groups?
Well, there was one called Saturday Night Leftovers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was the one that I was the most familiar with. I mean, I didn't see it, but of his speaking of.
And these developed from working with these kids, mm-hmm. these kids in this group. I wonder, was that his first... Did he have a lot of improv experience from New York, or was this kind of a new thing that he was developing in St. Louis?
I would suspect that he probably did have. I don't know that.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure he would have.
And he didn't have any relationships in St. Louis. Like, there was no family there. He didn't know anybody when they moved there.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite an adjustment. Because Peter, I think by that point, Peter probably would have been in school, or maybe
he would have been in high school.
In high school.
I think so, yeah.
That's quite a move for him, mm-hmm. to move to St. Louis. I want to go back to some of the material that you talk about. What is your approach to scenic design? Again, based on your influence from travel, color, everything like that, how do you approach scenic design?
Well, first I read the script.
Mm-hmm.
And... then, obviously, there's a lot of, I mean, really, just practical things that have to be dealt with, you know, like entrances, mm-hmm. Levels, things like that, if those are necessary. The most recent pieces that I've been working on, I really have not been doing that. What I'm working on now, I think more in terms of sculpture, actually. In early on, that would not necessarily have been as evident, because the setting of the play may have been more realistic, mm-hmm. or seemed to require that. So, and a lot of it, actually, you have to think in terms of traffic. Mm. I mean, literally, just...
Yes, true.
You know, the
true.
Way that people have to be able to move around. One thing I try to introduce, introduce, is diagonals.
Okay, yes.
Because,
yes.
again, it's more... alive in movement, you know, for the actors, and to be perceived by the audience rather than straight horizontal.
So directors work from good directors work from diagonals too.
Yeah, well, I try to encourage it in the way that you know this because we worked together.
We did,
And that whole set was set on diagonals.
It sure was. Yes, it was. You know,
So
levels and diagonals and I should say we worked on Caroliner Change. Atif was our scenic designer for Caroliner Change, the musical,
which was wonderful to work on.
It's a beautiful piece. Mm-hmm. Beautiful piece. When we get back from a quick break, I want to talk to you about you've talked about the idea that when you sometimes approach design, you approach it from a visual artist standpoint rather than necessarily just a theater design designer aspect. I want to talk to you a little bit about that. We are on Show People with Atif Romi. And we're back with Show People with our guest today, Atif Romi, and we are talking with him also about his late partner, the lovely Richard Allen Nichols, who we all greatly miss here in Kansas City. He was a lovely, lovely person. I'm glad that I got to know him. I wish that I had been able to work with him, but I am honored that I got to get to know him. Visual artist, you mentioned this to me in a former conversation of ours, that you approach design thinking more like a visual artist than a theater one. Can you tell me what you mean by that?
You know, I can honestly say I don't know what I mean by that.
Okay.
And I was even thinking about it after we had talked, and I don't... I would say that my training has probably made me look at things a little differently, especially, I think, the art history training that I've had. That gives me a little bit different background than somebody that would go through a traditional theater program. But having never gone through a traditional theater program, I don't really know, whether that is true or not. But I would say maybe one of the things is my references would be coming more from an art history background than it might otherwise, had I gone through a traditional theater training.
In 1980, when you met Allen, what were you doing? What were you working on here in Kansas City?
At that point, I would have been doing... I was very involved with the Kansas City Artists Coalition, and I was the co-editor of their publication Forum. So that was one of the things I was doing. And then also I was doing graphic design for publication and for PR and things like that. And also I was designing costumes for dance.
Which company?
At that point it would have been the Westport Ballet Company. Prior to that at the Kansas City Ballet.
Was the Westport Ballet Company right here? Where were they located?
They were in actually just down the street.
I think so, right?
Here. Yeah.
This former building here. Okay. And what got Allen moving here from St. Louis? What brought him to Kansas City?
He had auditioned for Missouri Repertory Theater here and was hired.
Now the Kansas City Rep was formerly known as the Missouri Rep.
Yeah, that's what brought him here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so when he moved here, was he only coming here for a season, for one show?
No, he was hired for the season. I don't know which shows, quite frankly. And I would imagine at that point, and I'm just making a guess here, that he would have been open to this maybe where he was moving to, but he may also have been open to a different move, depending on what happened.
After being here.
Because it was a real... That was when he and his wife divorced. And he, at that point, was, totally out. Finally.
Was it in St. Louis where he came to the understanding of it? Do you remember? Did he ever tell you about...
Coming
out, realizing that he was a gay man.
Oh, he knew he was a gay man when he was a child.
The whole child, yep.
Yeah.
But coming to terms with it years later?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did Joanne and Peter stay in St. Louis?
No, they went back to New York.
Okay. Right after?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So there probably wasn't much of a question. He comes out here to work at Missouri Rep and stays.
Right.
And stays. He met you soon after, right? Is that about right?
I don't know. Let's see. So, I would say maybe about 3-4 years after.
3 years after. Okay, yeah. What did he form in 1985?
What did he form?
1985. What program did he start here?
Oh,
what school?
His Actors Class Studio.
Mm-hmm. What did he, was there, did he carry on some of the Uta Hagen technique?
Oh, yes. This was the whole basis for his teaching. Yeah.
And immediately, was this a training program for more than, was this an ongoing training program that he developed?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Actually, when he first started, we had rented a house. And prior to this, he had done the teaching in various different locations. But then we rented this house that allowed us to, for the first floor was actually his teaching studio, second floor we lived on, and then eventually the third floor was my studio. And
where was this hearing?
This was on Warwick.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, just down from 39th.
Okay.
And there he was not only teaching, but it really had like a salon in that there were theatrical pieces were being presented, and some of which were original pieces, and some of which were, you know, not. And so he was teaching and presenting.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And all during this time, too, he was also acting in town?
Yes.
Was he directing as well?
Yes.
He was directing for other... Did he direct for other theaters around town as well?
Yeah.
He did.
Oh. And in academia. He would direct in a university setting.
Was that Rockhurst or was that somewhere else?
Well, Park.
Park, right.
Was where it first won in this area, and then Rockhurst is another one.
Mm-hmm. And you're also at Rockhurst as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Johnson County Community College, and I think Avila. Anyway, around, you know.
How was his student base for the actors? It's the Actors Craft Studio, correct?
His student base.
His student base, were a lot of them, they were all like local Kansas City actors?
Yes. Well, some of them actually came in from like Lawrence or Topeka, but mostly it would be here. And a full range. I mean, it could literally be like a 15-year-old up to an 80-year-old,
right.
Which was really fascinating.
I can imagine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, to witness that.
Yeah.
Was there probably wasn't a lot, I mean, I can't even remember, did UMK, at that time, was UMKC a strong, I mean, there was a strong theater department,
yes,
at UMKC, mm-hmm. But other than that, training for the actor in Kansas City was probably a pretty new thing outside of a university setting.
I think, yeah, I think there was one other acting studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you think back, can you remember a role that you saw Alan in that stuck with you? That you were like, just, I mean, I'm sure you love seeing him all the time. Is there something that sticks with
you? Yes, the father in Proof.
Ah.
Was something else. And then the poet in Night of the Iguana.
Mm.
Those two.
Mm. Those were Missouri Rap, weren't they? Proof?
No. Proof was Unicorn.
Unicorn, got it. Okay.
And Night of the Iguana was Met.
He did a piece called the Sum of Us as well, which is a play that I did in Boston. I saw that and I remember thinking that he would have been wonderful in that role. I imagine he was the dad in The Sum of Us.
Yes, and that was the Actors and Artists Against AIDS, that whole group.
And I actually don't know anything about that. Tell me about that group.
Well, it was, you know, in the height of the whole thing, there was a group of us that were, you know, doing pieces that were on those topics, you know. And it was really a very vibrant thing. Barbara Schaefer was really major in getting that all going.
Mm-hmm. Where was that? Where was it? Was this a moving place, or did you have a location?
The ones I recall were at Unity.
Oh, okay.
As a locale, you know, for where the production was actually done.
Okay. How long did this last? What was it called again? It was called the...
Actors and Artists Against AIDS.
Actors and Artists Against AIDS. And how long did that program last?
I'd say it was probably just a couple of years, mm-hmm. really.
When we chatted about you and Alan, you talked about that your life was life as a production meeting.
Right.
Tell us about that life.
Well, that specifically when we had the good opportunity to work together on a number of projects where he would be the director and I would be a designer. Mm. So it really was, when we sat down and had dinner, and we had very specific, there was a ritual to dinner. It's not just grabbing something to eat. There are always flowers. There are always candles. There are always, yes.
It's a beautiful event. It's a beautiful, yes.
And
was this just dinner?
Yes.
We had that? Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so when we would be working on a project, a conversation, it would be a production meeting. I mean, we'd be talking about what we were doing, which was wonderful.
Was there ever a stated rule that you didn't talk about that and then move to it? Or was it always like, this is the arts, this is our table?
This is what we do.
Yeah. Can you talk about a project that you did work on with him?
Yes. Glass Menagerie.
Hmm.
That was wonderful. We did the research in it where we literally, we went to St. Louis, which he was quite familiar with.
Right.
And we went to the actual building that Williams would have been in, and actually photographed it. I photographed that, and actually that was used in the poster for the show, was the back staircase of that building. But just going to all these different places that, just the research.
Yes.
Alan loved research. Well, I also love research.
You did too, yeah.
But he really got deep, deep, deep into the research. So that particular, and I love Tennessee Williams. So yeah,
me too.
Mm-hmm. That was that one. We had such a good time working on that.
I will be celebrating 20 years with my husband, and many of those years, and much the same, we have worked together.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand the life as a production meeting, because we're always working on projects together. Mm-hmm. How wonderful that you had that.
Yes.
Was there some times where he was hired to be a director and he brought you along, or vice versa, where you were hired as a designer and you brought him along at specific places, or were these things that you created together?
The first theatrical piece that I ever did, I had been doing costume for dance, but was actually Alan was directing it, and we had met, I think we'd known each other maybe a couple of years by that time, and this was at Park College.
Oh, okay.
And so he asked if I would design the costumes for it.
Right.
And it was The Great War. It was the name of it, and it was Frank Higgins.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes. Yes.
Way back when. There were times. Then after that, if we both landed up on a project, more than likely the producer and that had chosen to hire both of us.
Uh-huh. Will you talk about your relationship a little bit? How did you complement each other? Were you very alike, very different? 40 years.
Gosh, I don't know. I think we're quite different.
Yeah.
Quite different. But I don't really know how to. One thing, excuse me. Alan was very, very disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he accomplished as much as he did. Mm-hmm. He's incredibly disciplined. I think a great deal more disciplined than myself. But I don't know how to really elaborate more.
Yeah,
on that.
Yeah. We all miss him so much. Travel. Is there a country that you would like to revisit that you've been to before?
Yes, I'd love to get back to India.
Mm.
But that's a long ways away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Italy.
Italy?
Mm-hmm. I love Italy.
How about a country you have never visited before that you would like to?
I'd like to get down into South America.
Ooh, yeah. Where specifically?
I don't know. But I again, I'm very, very interested in the culture and that. I'd like that. I'd also like to get to Greece, which when I was there, you know, where I could have gone to Greece, they were in some kind of major conflict, political, all that. And I was advised not to go there, which I had, it was really stupid of me to have done that. Yeah. I'd been to places that nobody goes to, you know. Why I listened, I don't know. I really wished I'd have gone to Greece.
Yeah. Maybe still. Maybe sure. Still.